Week 1. What's it like to be God to us sometimes? How we got here. In reading the Minor Prophets for the first time, you might see their poetic language, dire warnings, and intense expressions of the love of God and be tempted to ask, are these guys for real? The answer to that question would be, absolutely. The times and the problems were real, just as God and His saving promises are real. The situation in each Minor Prophet's day had reached a tipping point, and God needed to warn those who would hear Him of what was coming if things didn't change. These prophets spoke to their own neighbors and to the heights of power. They spoke to people who claimed to know God and to those who cared little about Him. They spoke to the poor and downtrodden and to some of the most powerful nations in world history. They spoke to gentle souls who loved God and loved people, and they spoke to violent oppressors who cast God to the side and destroyed whole groups of people through human atrocities I hope we can't imagine. In short, these mighty miners were not easily rattled. When reading these books, God's message and tone in them has to be understood properly. Does God sometimes sound angry in them? Yes, but one thing I discovered that originally got me interested in the 12, God is usually not just angry at what His people have done, He is utterly brokenhearted. Now, starting from that deep emotional pitch, the rest of the music of the 12 takes its truest tone. In fact, the reason why I am drawn to these writings even surprised me when I realized it. In spending time with these books, I found one thing at the center of all these stirring and sometimes troubling oracles: the unceasing love of God. His love is on full display in the Minor Prophets, with the deeply wounded expressions of a broken heart, sometimes to the point of becoming embarrassing, given that they come from the Maker of heaven and earth. Why would He pursue a people who rejected Him over and over? It's almost like seeing that young man who won't give up on the girl of his dreams when she clearly wants nothing to do with him, as he stands outside her window crying and telling her how much he loves her. You want to tell the guy, just stop, man. It's time to move on. She doesn't want you at all. What a terrifying thought if God were to take that advice towards us, a wayward humanity prone to wander and break His heart as we so often do. The Minor Prophets say one message loudly and clearly: God will never stop loving us and will keep His promises to His children, even if we break our own. As Paul stated, let God be true, though everyone were a liar. Romans 3:4. They also have another recurring theme: God never sweeps sin under the rug or turns a blind eye to the evil we can do to each other. We have to hold both of these themes as we journey with Hosea and the rest of the 12. These themes do not contradict. They reveal a caring, active, and compassionate God who works for our good in every season. The language God used in the Minor Prophets, like Hosea, might seem harsh to some people, but it's music to the ears of those who are tired of the hypocritical machinery of dead religion that never addresses the root issues of our brokenness. What we should be looking for is not idle sympathy, but a path forward. I wonder if the day isn't near when the coming generation might suddenly say, this isn't working. Everything is getting worse when all we want is for everyone to be happy. What is going on? We need a way out. Well, hello, Minor Prophets. Hope in hard times. At the beginning of his book, Hosea listed the kings during whose time he prophesied. Almost 200 years before Hosea, the kingdom of Israel had split into two parts because of some really bad leadership. There was now a northern kingdom of Israel and a southern kingdom of Judah. Each kingdom had its own series of kings, but the northern kingdom got started on the wrong foot and never got back on track with God. The southern kingdom had good kings and bad kings, but all of them until the end had one thing in common. They were all in David's line. The northern kingdom was marked by political assassinations, cultural rot, immorality, abuse of power, and love of money and international standing over the purpose and presence of God. Jeroboam II was the last king in the north who was considered to be legitimate. Murders and political coups followed one after the other until the fall of the northern kingdom. The southern kingdom in Hosea's day had three good kings with one really terrible one in between them. King Ahaz in Jerusalem was the terrible one who curried favor with pagan kingdoms and modeled his court and even religion after theirs. He went so far as to close the temple of God in Jerusalem entirely. God got in the way of what he wanted to do. His corrupt leadership poisoned the culture and drove the people away from God into gross immorality and idolatry. Now, Hezekiah was a king after him and turned the nation around as much as he could. As we start off in Hosea, please keep these things in mind. The people weren't listening to God at all in Hosea's day. And where they were headed was no less than utter destruction. God had to change his tone to cut through the noise. Maybe he might need to do that for us as well, especially if we start heading down the wrong road that leads to wreckage and regret. The challenge is to see these events from God's perspective and not simply a practical one. Hosea is a perfect introduction to God's perspective in the Minor Prophets on the wreckage that sin causes, but also the healing and restoration our redeeming God desires to give. Never forget, it's the love of a broken-hearted God that breathes out every word of Hosea to hard-hearted and stiff-necked people. His love that is on display here is truly amazing. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, given all that we see going on here in the Northern Kingdom, especially political assassinations, violence, religious and civic corruption, what might it have been like to try and raise a family during that time? To run an honorable business? To be a faithful Jew who longed for God's will to be done? Number two, in today's world, when the world pushes its way into daily life for the believer, making it difficult to live out our faith, how do we respond? What are your prayers like in those times for your church, for your family, your business, and your country? Our place in the story. Well, Hosea sure starts with a bang. The Minor Prophets, sometimes called the 12, can be a pretty straightforward bunch, but hang in there. There are major issues to discuss, and prophets like Hosea are there to say what desperately needs to be said. Never forget that the intention with these books then and now is the same: reconciliation with God. What we will need to balance as we explore Hosea is the faithful love of our promise-keeping God with the faithless expression of His wayward people. God does not give up. Without some historical background, the prophets can sound like grumpy old men But the more you learn about what's going on by reading the books of Kings and Chronicles in the Bible, the more the minor prophets make sense. In their day, things were in a real mess. The people of God had done awful things to each other and reflected the cruel and violent world around them instead of reflecting the good character of their God into it. When we set God to the side in how we live our lives, things can get ugly pretty quickly. King David's leadership was the height of Israel's time as a nation. A couple of hundred years after that time, the people of Israel had fallen into deep rebellion against God, though he loved them and had called them to be his very own people. The stench of their rampant sin had risen long enough for God to speak very plainly about it. His desire is always first to bless his people, but being his people means something. That is true today. God wants the world to know his eternal character, largely through those who call him Lord today and how they shine like lights in the world and share his gospel of peace. Philippians 2:15. Better understanding of my place in the story really brings the minor prophets home for me. Paul's words in 2 Corinthians are for all Christians to consider when he said that in Christ, quote, God was reconciling the world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. 5:19-20. We are his ambassadors. God makes his appeal to the world through us. Now the minor prophets get really relevant for us. When the world to which God was reaching out says bad things about God because of how his people were living and acting, God spoke pretty strongly. You can see Matthew chapter 23. Sadly, that is what was going on here in Hosea. And it still goes on today. And God still feels the same way about it. Now that gives me a gut check. Do I feel the same way about the brokenness of sin as God does? Do I care about this world as God does? In Hosea, the offense was deep enough for God to compare the faithless words and actions of his people over years and years to the actions of a prostitute or adulterous wife who was a slave to her lust, passion, and desire. She just wouldn't stay. Hosea is a book that begins with a heartbreaking cry, but it also pulls no punches. We are forced to get real from the very first word. Are you sick of the wreckage of sin as I am? You ready to get real about it? Then let's keep going. Hosea leads the way. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, when we set God to the side in how we live our lives as Christians, things can get ugly pretty quickly. In Hosea, we see God calling his wayward people to stop drifting and to return to him. What are some words that come to mind in describing God's character towards us in his always seeking reconciliation with those who get lured away by the world? Number two, why are those words significant to you personally? Number three, read 2 Corinthians 5:17-20. Better understanding our place in the story really brings the 12 home for us. Look at what Paul says is our role as followers of Jesus. How does it strike you that we are ambassadors for Christ, and that God makes his appeal to an unbelieving world through us. Number four, what are some ways that, as a Christian, it might be difficult to live out a life of faith in a world so full of shiny and desirable things that lure us away from God? Number five, what choices might we have to make personally to follow Christ in faith each day? Getting right down to it. Chapters 1 through 3 of Hosea are the most famous parts of that book for lots of reasons. Over many years before Hosea's day, the prideful rebellion of the people of Israel damaged the relationship with God and with each other until God had to drop the hammer through the minor prophet Hosea. Historically speaking, Israel had split by this time into Israel, Northern Kingdom, and Judah, Southern Kingdom, because of deep divisions after Solomon's death. In this book, Hosea was mostly talking to the rebellious Northern Kingdom of Israel with its capital of Samaria. This eye-opening message was given by Hosea in the early 700s BC, most likely. God stated the purpose right up front. The people of Israel needed a crystal clear picture of what it was like to be God to them and to reveal their spiritual adultery concerning God. The people just didn't want to stay with him. The world that wanted nothing to do with God was too alluring. Being faithful to God required too much, they thought. The relationship with God was too restrictive. The commitment to him too confining. You heard all that before? Maybe you've even felt that way before. What strains our relationship with God the most is usually due to something that down the road we will wish we had never experienced or sought. No once upon a time here. We start with this. The Lord said to Hosea, quote, "Take to yourself a wife of whoredom and have children of whoredom, for the land commits a great whoredom by forsaking the Lord." Hosea 1, verse 2. Yikes! This is such a shocking and unsettling thing for God to say that some scholars and translators have put forward interpretations and alternative translations to ease the blow. I personally don't think that easing the blow serves us well here. The whole point is to rattle the complacent hearers out of their sinful slumber, including us. But why would God see marriage, and a broken marriage, as a good way to describe Israel's relationship with him? And that seems a bit out of place, doesn't it? How can one be married to God? Adultery and prostitution are also not very winsome terms, to say the least, when referring to people. It helps me here to think about what marriage means between a man and a woman. It's a commitment of love and fidelity, forsaking all others, to live not as two people, but as one in their faithful bond. This is a mysterious unity, but is real nonetheless. It's a beautiful picture that God used very often in Scripture to describe his relationship with his people. The church today is even called, what, the Bride of Christ in the New Testament. Okay, now think about adultery. This is tough, but let's consider it. What does it mean? What does it entail? It's a selfish act of betrayal against a lifelong covenant of faithfulness. It destroys trust. It produces shame and relational wreckage in everyone involved. The bond is broken. The faithful love intended for marriage is cast aside and is counted for less than whatever is sought out in sinful, adulterous action. Without God's grace, forgiveness, and restoration, adultery destroys what is good in faithful love without hope of healing. Certainly, marriage is not easy sometimes, but adultery is never a good idea. It is a destructive act, whether it is intended to be or not. God is faithful and full of compassion, however. We can rest in that. Still, it's very interesting to me that God would see the relationship he had with his people as a marriage. I have learned that, in fact, it was a truly unique idea. Relationship. Of God's use of the picture of marriage in his relationship with his people, J. Andrew Dearman in his commentary states, "It is possible that Hosea was the first to employ the metaphor of husband for the deity, casting Israel in negative female imagery as God's adulterous wife. Of the prophetic texts that make explicit the analogy of marriage with covenant, Hosea is indeed the earliest. Whatever the historical development of these institutions in Israel, it is surprising that, according to present knowledge, neither marriage nor covenant was used elsewhere in the ancient Near East to define an exclusive relationship between deity and people. The marital metaphor is thus unique to the Old Testament." Dearman, Hosea. Humanity, in all its efforts to create deities to worship, never came up with this one. To view the relationship between God and his people in marital terms would be absurd to the culture surrounding Israel in Hosea's day. Their religions were not typically reflecting the love of gods for the people who worshiped them. Those gods were meant to be appeased and demanded submission. It's an easy thing today for us to say, "God loves you," but do you realize what an incredible statement that is? How foreign to pagan religions, even today, that is. Don't let that get by too quickly. He does what he does because he loves us. And that is truly unique and wonderful. Focus on faithfulness. I wouldn't want to be in Hosea's shoes at all. Look at what he had to do. Seek out a prostitute named Gomer as a wife whose love for him couldn't be relied upon. She built her life around pleasure and personal gain in base sexual action unrelated to marital love. She may have been married to him in name, but didn't really desert her old habits and lusts for long. She may have done her duty for a while, as it were, but she soon left him and her kids to sell herself again to, quote, whoredom, as the text puts it. What did God tell Hosea to do about that? Two chapters later, he told him to go to her, get her, and bring her back home to be his wife again. It must have been embarrassing for Hosea to pay an even greater price to redeem her out of what may very well have been sex slavery, as some commentators have noted. I am reminded of the shame and humiliation Jesus was put through on the cross to win our freedom. We who are prone to stray and wander into dark, sinful places so often. The point is made of Gomer that from the very beginning, she was redeemed from an empty way of life, even though the kind of marriage they had didn't really jibe too well with the law of Moses. As Dearman again noted in his Hosea commentary, quote, "It seems being bizarre or offensive did not disqualify an act as a prophetic communication," close quote. No joke. Isaiah was told by God to walk around barefoot and naked as a sign to Israel's offending neighbor countries. That's Isaiah 20, verses 1 through 6. In any case, Hosea's new bride didn't stay around very long and left her family to return to her previous life. She'd rather live with the wreckage of that way of living than be in a faithful relationship with a husband who would do anything for her. Being faithful did not have the allure that unfaithfulness had. The Bible seemed to assume that being rescued from prostitution was not something that Gomer really embraced. It's a startling picture, but one that has a clear spiritual meaning. Just let her go, Hosea. She is what she is. Filthy woman isn't worthy of the effort. If that's what she wants, then let her go. Be a harlot. Don't lower yourself to seek after her and bring her back at such a price. It's beneath the dignity of someone like you, some may have said to him. If I'm honest with myself, am I more like Hosea, the prophet, or Gomer, the prostitute, when it comes to living faithfully with God in how I have thought and acted? Could someone say those same things to God about me in some way for him to just let me go? Has the temptation of the world been too alluring for me in my past? What's it like for God to be God to me? What's it like for God to be God to you? Let's put a finer point on it. How many times in our lives have we hidden from God in shame and fear due to our sin, like Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden, with God calling out, "Where are you, Adam?" How often in our past has the Good Shepherd had to leave the 99 to come after us, who had strayed off into dangerous lands, thinking we could always find our way back again? How often have we attempted to bury our personal deceptions as David did, until God sent someone to us like Nathan to point them out and declare us frauds and practitioners of the very thing we condemn in others? How often have we been like the tax collector that Christ described in the temple, having no words, but merely beating his breast and weeping before God in silence, knowing that what he had done, said, or thought had been bitterly offensive to God? How many times can we even count them? I don't know about you, but God being God to me sounds a lot like the relationship of Hosea and Gomer, more than I would like to admit. Sometimes, like the psalmist, I ask, quote, "What is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him?" Psalm 8:4. Why does God care for us so much, even when we can treat him so terribly and be so unfaithful to him in our brokenness? Hosea hits close to home. This message of a God who won't give up because he loves us too much to leave us lost is one for me. And I bet it's one for you, too. Holy best. Remember what's at the very heart of this great book. A God who won't give up on the least of us, but also a God who won't ever surrender to anything less than his holy best for us. Are you stubborn sometimes? Hey, I relate. The book of Hosea is for you, and it's going to sting. But it's a good sting, though. Newsflash, God is stubborn too, but in a righteous way. He'll outlast all our foolishness. Open your heart and your mind to the Good Shepherd, Jesus, our Redeemer. Sometimes we get ourselves into places in our lives where it's hard for us to explain how in the world we let ourselves get there. But God is always faithful. He had Hosea redeem Gomer out of perverse slavery. Now, through the risen Christ, he still redeems, but in even more powerful ways. Through Christ, he makes us new creations. 2 Corinthians 5:17. Even so, as we'll see later in Hosea, he wants us to stay with him and be richly blessed, not to wander off into hurtful places. This story in Hosea is your story and my story. More than that, it is God's story of his faithful love for us. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, God's using the picture of a faithful and loving marriage to describe our relationship with him is truly extraordinary. Why would God turn to a faithful marriage as a description for what he desires for us through Jesus today? Number two, what does that say about what he wants? Number three, Hosea starts out strong, but God's love is always the gas in the engine for the minor prophets. However, if you and I were to be honest, what is it like for God to be God to us sometimes?